Good morning and welcome, everyone. Today is May 18th, 2017, Thursday. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for County Administration Workshop. So we've got Department Business, Human Resources, Request for Administrative Policy Update, and we have Mr. Schofield here.
Good morning, Commissioners. So I have five policies that I would recommend updating. Most of them are just verbiage updates. They say CFO. We don't have a CFO anymore. We have a finance director. Policy A03, I included some language that it talks about department head changeover, and I just put some language in there that puts in if someone is gone as a result of protected leave, that it gives that caveat in there so that it's clear that the person who left has protections according to federal law.
Why are you updating this now? How come we didn't do this? And do we have anything in our policies referencing a COO? Because we've had both at the same time before you were here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when we had Marie Hill and Rosemary. So is there anything else we needed to do, or is this just cleaning up the last CFO stuff?
This is just the last CFO. I basically went through all of the policies that are associated with human resources and risk management.
Okay.
And said, you know, these...
A couple of these are...
Yeah. There's also a couple policies dealing with drug testing that needed to be updated because they had old contact information in it, and they also needed to be updated for the list of positions that we put into our drug testing consortium because those have changed over the years.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say that any of them, I would say none of them are substantive changes, but they're just updating. They all have gone through legal. So Leah looked at them and made a couple.
The one substantive change, and we have had the need to appoint interim directors of programs, and you changed it from a one step to 10% of their salary. Is that market-driven, or how did we arrive at that? Is that typical?
It is. Matter of fact, when I was promoted into a supervisor position, I contacted other places and... was told that 10% should be the standard kind of break between the levels, and that's not what happened. And it was like, okay, well, I want the position. It's going to be what it is. So it's, but that's what I learned when I was
not necessarily
switching.
A promotion.
This was for
interim appointments. So if the fairgrounds manager isn't there and we ask Rob to do it, Rob's impacted by, you know, or Ryan or something like that. So the proposal is to not just go one step, but to go 10% of their salary. And that's interesting because it is proportional based upon the hierarchy of that position. So as a negative impact to the fairgrounds, it would be advantageous fiscally to appoint a lower cost manager
as opposed to
at 10%. It's the same thing probably.
A step wouldn't be any different because the steps are very incrementally small increases.
How does that affect compression or anything like that? Does it have any effect on it?
It doesn't really. We're talking about a temporary appointment. And if you look at the history,
they're arbitrary. They're not like when we hire temporary staff. That has got a limit of 6 months for good reason on union negotiations because it looks as though you're supplanting a permanent position with a temporary person who's cheaper and not a union member, and so we get into that. But we could have an interim director of the airport or the fair forever.
Well, it said in there, and I think it was you changed the new language, said 12 months, and then it would go up again, but the board could renew that 12 months. But I didn't get to read far enough in it to say if you could continue to do that on 12 months.
There's no limit.
There's no limit
to that. In fact, I don't even know if there's efficacy of even having a limit, because I think the board would always be encouraged to either replace that person or put them into a permanent position.
Right.
And I think that's what that's what the board is going to have as an intent.
Why?
Because I don't think a manager wants to be like in the gray
area
of an intern forever.
Yeah. I view those
as guiding
increments of time as a breaking point. We had an interim employee over across the pond, and when it came to 18 months, you know, then that was when it said, well, you can't let me go. Just say, no, your 18-month interim is over. that gave you a chance for review at 12 months or 18 months.
Yeah.
It gives you a break in the action so you can do things like
that. Well, that's a good argument for actually having that break maybe a little bit more more timely, like a 6 month. Hey, so that, you know,
it was
I mean?
6 months.
Oh.
It was 6 months. It went to 12.
Well, I kind of like 6 months. Why do you want 12, JJ? How's
12 months is great.
I need a dissertation on why you don't. I'm just kidding. Because it really doesn't mean
put it here.
Much. But if you're looking as a revisiting,
I'm looking
you can
at it as
advertise,
revisiting.
Close advertisement,
right.
Interview, and
right.
Look for potential hires in 6 months.
Right.
And if you don't have that done in 6 months, you should have had that done. And I wouldn't want to wait a year.
Well,
I would suggest we have some
room
positions in the county that you can't fill in 6 months, getting through background checks and... I'm going to bring up law enforcement related.
Probably.
Where you have standards of different things you have to meet. So looking at the...
I think this is just board. This isn't for just everybody.
This is just for department manager. I think the reason I looked at 12 months...
Corrections.
I think the reason I looked for 12 months is the old policy was... It had, from my perspective, a fairly short duration before the board says, thou shalt now make this a permanent position and you have to do it. And the new one gives you more flexibility than the old policy. And
saying 12 months of services, you will extend another interim, another for a maximum of 12 months, or you can appoint a regular position.
There is no shall. All of these policies are at the discretion of
I mean, ultimately...
But it says shall, just so you know.
But even if a policy says shall, you all set the policy,
no shalls in these policies. Ordinances have shalls, and those are binding.
Yeah.
Orders, which is how this is adopted, they don't have shalls.
Well, and I would be curious. I know that there is some compression issues with... and all I was meaning by the earlier one is what I was told is standard is you have 10% caps between layers.
I think that's consistent. I don't mind that at all.
Yeah.
But would it be that if you have some that are closer than that and the interim bumped you up and then they go for the permanent and it was less?
Job security.
That's what negotiations are for.
Yeah, it's interesting.
That's good.
I mean, the reason I went with 10 is if you look at the history of what we've actually done over the last 5 or 6 years, we've done a lot of different things. And in the last 3 or so years, 10% is kind of what we have done. And so I put the policy to reflect what we actually do.
I like that. It's consistent and it's predictable.
Because mm-hmm.
Some of these managers have been appointed interim managers several times.
Yeah.
And for them to know when I'm taking this on, that's the policy. It's 10%.
On the other side I thought of it is, realistically, let's say I'm... parks manager, super busy, and the board says, hey, parks manager, you get to take over the fairground for the next 3 or 4 months. And that's a big thing to put on their plate. And I didn't think one step was, frankly, enough compensation to offset the tremendous extra workload.
You know, that could be why we have had a variance, like you said, in the last, I'd go back even 6 years, because the degree to which if there's an under manager, that person's as an interim is just as operating as a supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
They're not actually managing the day-to-day operations of that program, but if there isn't a supervisor or an under sheriff or something like that, then they are.
Yeah.
You know, they're the head honcho, they're the supervisor, they're on a daily basis, and so the responsibility is different depending on the management structure in that program. So that you're allocating a flat fee of 10% feels convenient, but it may not be reflective of what the actual... be more, it could be less.
Yeah.
And maybe that discretion is best left to the board on a case-by-case basis. I don't know.
I don't have any problem with the 10%.
I think that'll be...
Well, and ultimately, again, this is an order that the board, on a case-by-case basis, wants more or less. That's 100% at your discretion.
It's a good guide.
I view these administrative policies as it relates to you all as guidelines, not hard rules.
Guidelines, exactly.
I think they're guidelines, you know. Sounds good. And the alcohol or the drug ones. Mm. I think what's important to note for the record is that these interim appointments with this 10% if approved adjustment are temporary. At the expiration of that appointment, they go back to where they were.
Yeah.
It specifically says that in the policy as though the appointment never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really key for the public to understand that it's not you get in for a couple of months and then forever after you're at this higher appreciated level. And that's really what would be key for me.
I'm looking at the language, I'm trying to find the language for the testing. And do you know what section that's in?
It's intermixed
and
updated, so there's a red line.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just skip a couple paragraphs, a page, and then there's another reference to it.
I almost wonder if you need to go so specific and, if anything, go more general. Testing of any substance through any means via, available in current standards or something like that. Because they're constantly changing what they can test for and how they test for it. As substances continue to come into play and have impact, and, I mean, at least coming from the standpoint that I observed testing constantly, whether it be spit or urine or blood or whatever, but they're constantly
maybe more of a spit.
No, it was spit.
No.
It didn't even, and he has spit in his his thing. But saliva would be, but that's just it though. Is instead like what if in 4 years
I
they determine?
I almost want to make reference to it and call it out, but I just thought it was funny.
Yeah,
that you said that.
But I've read it.
Yeah. Well, and it's specified that way because there's some federal there's those two policies because there's two of them that are like 20-page long. Well, those are based on some federal regulations that they're spelled out that way.
Sounds good to me. Any objections to moving this forward?
No, but just realize I haven't read the whole thing yet, but I like what I've seen so far.
If you have anything, we can actually make adjustments at the weekly business session, amend it there. And So all up until Wednesday. Yeah, it shouldn't feel like this is your only opportunity, really. The 6 days for the public to weigh in on this and why we publish it on Friday is really so that there's an ability for input. Other counties don't take public input on agenda items, which really for me is totally a slap in the face to the open public meeting law, where you will take public comment at your public meetings when you take action on matters of interest to the public. So how do they have, like at Jackson County, how do they have an opportunity to weigh in on that? If you can't speak to it at the weekly business session where they make the decision, I wonder why somebody hasn't challenged that. That's totally against the law, in my opinion.
Well, I think you allow...
The city does this.
Hmm?
The city does this. They don't allow you to speak on agenda items.
No, but when the agenda item comes up, that's when public comment on that item, that's when you talk about it. So you're not...
That's when the public gets to talk about it. But they shouldn't be restricted to not talking about it when it's just general comment. So they have multiple opportunities to address the council?
Yeah.
Every item.
Jackson County Board does not have that.
I can see it either way.
You just have to afford the public an opportunity to speak on the decision that's being made. And so
right. They offer that opportunity when the agenda item is before the council.
That makes sense. Commissioner Moore.
Random testing, why do we limit it to only, or how do we find safety-sensitive positions?
Safety sensitive is defined a bit loosely, but it's defined in DOT regulations, and then it is also defined in a couple litigated cases.
So we only care about people using substances that work for us if they're driving?
As it relates to that policy, because that's dealing with Department of Transportation.
Okay. I just want to make sure that we actually have a policy in place for any employee, period, to be tested, no matter what the position.
So we don't do random testing for all employees. We do random testing for specific sets of employees. We do reasonable suspicion testing for any employee in the whole county.
Okay.
So it's not random, but it's reasonable.
Reasonable suspicion. And we don't do pre-employment testing for all employees because of a litigated case six years ago, I believe, that dealt with the legal search and seizure. But we do pre-employment for all safety-sensitive positions.
So Parks falls under safety-sensitive?
if they fall under DOT, they do. So not all parks employees do.
Well, and I would counter that anybody that carries a firearm or has access to anything
those are safety sensitive.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then my other question.
Think of like a weed eater too.
Yeah, that's true. The other one I wanna make sure that we have somewhere in their pre-employment passing of a psychological examination if anybody has access to any firearms or anything else like that. I know we do that community corrections, but there's been talk about some of the other divisions, animal control officers, sheriff's office, anybody that's in that category, that we just make sure that that policy is consistent, that if there are firearms involved, they have to pass pre-employment screening.
Sure, and that isn't an actual administrative policy where we would set that. I mean, that's something that's we just set. These are the we're not legally obligated to do that, but we can have an internal policy where we do that. And I just have a spreadsheet that says for this position, these are the different things that we do. For this position, they drive, so they have to have a driver's report before we can hire them as part of the pre-employment.
What's the process for updating that if Commissioner Morgan making this recommendation that a prerequisite of hire is that they go through a psych evaluation?
Mm-hmm.
Is that in your matrix, and how do we assign that to the specific ones that Commissioner Morgan's talking about?
I think we've actually already updated it because I chatted with the sheriff. The law enforcement agencies already included that, and the sheriff wanted ACOs to go through the more expansive test before he would swear them in, and so we just already updated it. So ACOs are now, we just included those extra steps.
ACOs.
Animal control officers.
Yes.
I would almost wonder if juvenile will need to be reevaluated, because not only of firearms, but anything that could potentially be a use of force situation, making sure that that might be something we consider as well. And I know there's a lot of different regulations regarding juvenile and what they're allowed to do hands-on and not. Matter of fact, they're really restrictive in what they can do. But it would be appropriate. At one point, I had believed it appropriate to do pre-employment screening for emotional quotient. You know, it shows empathy, it shows ability to relate, it shows, kind of gives you, are they a sociopath? You know, you can weed those things out ahead of time. But you want to make sure that power control is not going to go to somebody's head and we have a liability situation. And so there's some screenings that you can actually look at those things. But anything where you have a custodial or a potential of detaining or holding accountable would maybe be appropriate to include that as a pre-screening as well, or some kind of form of assessment.
Yeah, I know I'll be meeting with Jim because his department is going to have some pretty substantial expansion. And frankly, it's going to take 18 months to 2 years to get his department staffed up.
I want it done in a year.
He doesn't get 18 months.
No.
Well,
he told us he could do it in 1 year.
I think that's a great goal. I know I have put in my budget some technology to help.
I have to fill
help,
in shifts.
To help,
will.
To help foster more expedient recruitment. So I've already been in contact with NeoGov, which is a pretty standard company that a lot of agencies, we don't use it because it was a bit cost prohibitive in the past, but negotiated a decent rate with them. So I think that'll help.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you.
All right.
I think it's probably an important thing for this board to, I mean, I've done comprehensive reviews under Sarah, your predecessor, and then when JJ came in a few years ago, we did another reevaluation of all of our current policies and stuff. It might be a good exercise. I don't know if it's individually or as a board, I'm happy to do it, but you know, to kind of have a recursor and a refresher. I think you're bringing up some points, Commissioner Morgan, that are really, really key to making sure we're covered on these. And you've got some insight that I don't have. You know,
this is changing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It changes all the time.
Yep.
I kind of have a rough objective to every couple of years we renew and revise our personal policy manual because we have legislative updates. Occasionally, things will happen sooner than that because it has to happen now. But it's pretty cumbersome to do policy changes. So at least every other year, administrative policies need to be changed, and every other year, personal policies need to be changed, unless something that needs to happen right away comes up, and that does.
Okay.
And that kind of keeps us in line with the ever-changing legal scope.
Obviously after the budget, but I think, you know, maybe in the fall or something would be a great time to do it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Are these moving forward?
Yes, and I think they're administrative elements.
And then we need an order from you, JJ.
Mm-hmm. I think I already gave you all an order. I'll double check, but I'm pretty sure I gave it to...
The business session is Monday at 1:30, just as a reminder.
Okay, thank you.
Is the agenda pretty packed?
No.
Okay.
It'll come off of...
Today. It'll be light. I'll review if whether or not these are administrative or consent. If they're a substantial policy change, I think they need to be an administrative element where we can really discuss them. Something that I think the public is going to want to buy in, that the administrative calendar is made up of fiscally changing things that were not in the budget or an administrative a policy change. I'm not sure that I really see these as dramatic policy changes. If we were to institute some sort of compensation for interim appointments, that seems like a dramatic policy change. But to make the policy like consistent to 10%, that's not a policy change. That's just a refinement of an existing policy. So that's my
only other financial.
And there's no direct financial impact to this because mm-hmm. we're not doing it as an example of something going on right now. It's just.
And then, other than the 10% is the time frames of kind of giving us some guidelines of 12 months with a maximum of a 12 month extension. So.
And we had a time frame before, so it's not introducing a time frame, which for me. I'm arguing this is a consent calendar item, Terry.
I would agree that it's consent as well, unless you would like to have
I'm fine with it, The rest of it is just title changes, you know. It's no longer a...
It's house cleaning.
Yeah.
Chief financial officer,
yeah.
he's a
yeah.
finance director.
Thank you, Mr. Schofield. Good to hear.
Thank you, Commissioner.
We're going to skip item B, which is community development. I think this is, from my standpoint, I met with Ms. Schmelzer yesterday about these. What I'd like is for this to be an opportunity for us to refresh. It's been a couple of months since we've looked at these.
Yeah.
She wants to move them forward as we had requested after the election, and also talked to her and legal about putting together some sort of an ordinance that would guide, that would be a reflection of the recent election question 1781. And so they're working on language. It should be fairly simple, kind of like a one-pager, restricting recreational marijuana, OLCC governed from RR zones in Josephine County. And so that will be coming as a draft.
How is Jackson County, isn't it Jackson County that has?
Jackson County prohibits agricultural, so it's a more of a broad ordinance that governs that. So by default, as marijuana is governed as an ag commodity, it was already restricted from RR zones. We didn't ask that question, but we can certainly talk about whether or not you want to restrict all agricultural elements, you know, production from RR zones. I think the way I'm going to request them to start is just to address OLCC recreational from RR, and if we want to expand it after that.
Well, I'm hoping the end game statewide is some consistency.
Yeah.
Because we've got right now, we got counties doing their own thing, and municipalities doing their own thing, Grants Pass does one thing, county does one thing, state does one thing. But then go from here to Jackson County, and it's altogether different. It's, you know,
I think the outcome will be the same.
Yeah.
The reason for being might be a little different.
Yeah.
So 1057, Senate Bill 1057, is basically rewriting most of the marijuana regulations. Wow. And I heard there's a component in it that anything over 12 plants, either medical or recreational, will fall under OLCC regulations.
I think I heard that too, and I'm not sure that that's going to move this time. Did you hear that? I heard it may not be.
Okay.
There was a fair amount of pushback from the medical marijuana community, so I think that can be an ongoing discussion and certainly part of...
Well...
Because we didn't ask about the medical, but if it is being governed by OLCC, that's what we asked, the recreational OLCC-governed element. So.
And I think that... it'll be interesting to see the impacts. We do not have a lot of recreational grows registered in Josephine County at all.
Well, or on RRs. I mean, even if we had 1,000 of them, we've got maybe 75 right now. There's only a handful that are on RR.
But
so
there
may not be a big drastic change.
Many medical grows on rural residential, which I think is what
is
drove the vote.
The challenge.
But yeah.
Because people don't necessarily know unless they go on OLC's website and say, oh, that guy is actually registered. I don't want to use up Mr. Kern's time for a discussion we will have.
Okay.
But as this moves forward.
And I am still working on trying to figure out the right components of what I would recommend to you guys for a medical advisory board, marijuana advisory board.
Good.
That other word. I haven't finished my tea yet today. I'm not quite.
Well, and you're drinking tea, so I imagine
it's...
How much can you expect from tea? Mr. Kearns.
Yes.
Thank you for being here today.
You bet. Good morning, first of all.
Good morning.
And I'm here to... present a timber sale that one of the sales that got sold this last April. It's called the Tommy's Thin. It is a thin. It's a spacing cut, basically. Small sale, 75,000 board feet. And we had five bidders on the sale. The winning bid was from Siskiyou Cascade Resources, LLC. And I'm here to answer any questions and also to recommend that we signed the contract so we can get going.
Did we use the sealed bid format on this one?
All of them.
Perfect. And that's going to be going forward? We're going to do the sealed bid from now on?
From what I understand, that's the way we're going to go. This was something new. The county hadn't done sealed bids in quite some time. It's
been
oral auction. So in looking back and reviewing how the results turned out, the high bids, we figured that was a pretty good idea. We did well.
You could have, and I would caution that you had, you know, because the bids came in higher, do you attribute it to that, the sealed bid part of it, or do you attribute it to the marketplace?
There was a
There were several reasons why that happened, and it's kind of comparing apples to oranges a bit. Most of the past sales had been thinning sales. We're doing more heavier cutting now. Logging costs go down because of that, and,
right.
And so the price for bid should come up, and I think it did on the,
also
on the sealed bid.
The scale of each sale was larger, so historically we've had, you know, maybe smaller chunks distributed. We had 8 sales, say, last year.
Larger acreage.
Yeah,
yes.
We had like three or four, one little small one or something like that. We had fewer sales, but more land, more volume. So it also allows a purchaser to depreciate those fixed costs of setting up over more volume, which, you know, brings down that fixed cost if you're distributing it. So there's and the market's good. There was a $264,000 difference between on the sealed bid. So the lower guy and the upper guy, that delta would not have happened had the higher guy who wanted the sale only had to bid $1 more per thousand
for
over that.
It's a double-edged sword.
It is.
You know, it can work both ways. But do we have a reserve? Do we ever put a reserve on these?
They all have
a minimum acceptable amount that we'll accept?
Right. Okay. All sales have a minimum.
Okay. Is the minimum published?
Yes,
it's part of the prospectus for the bid. So this sale in particular started out at $160 minimum and ended up coming up to $261. For the sale price, so pretty good range there.
So why is this one coming before us? Are the other ones doing that as well, or?
Well, the fellow that bought the sale, Joel Caswell of Siskiyou, he wanted to get started on the sale, and I believe there's.
So we haven't awarded any of the others as well. Are they waiting?
Yes, for signing.
Signing.
Yes.
Am I signing them, or is the full board signing?
It's the full board.
Okay.
Yep. Anyway, there's a minimum amount of time between when the performance bond is placed and when it needs to be signed. That deadline is approaching on this one anyway, and also the contractor had expressed interest in getting started on the sale. So.
Well, we want to expedite these processes as much as possible. I think some of this higher sales revenue is a reflection of current market being pretty good. So kind of want to, like, matching the real estate market, we want to match that. If they're ready to go, they are purchasing, you know, potentially millions of board feet, so they're working on other projects, even they kind of leapfrog. So
is there a qualified bidders list? Or, I mean, you get a new guy in the area and he's, I'm going to come and bid on all this stuff. Is there a list of qualifications they need to meet to become a bidder?
Well, they have to be a licensed contractor, number one. They have to, which is a state process. And they also, we don't actually do backgrounds on how well they've done on other sales, although that information with a couple phone calls can be readily available. We do have a large list of potential bidders. We've kind of whittled that down a bit and made some phone calls saying, are you interested in bidding anymore? Some of the folks, companies have gone out of business or done something else. And anyway, we've updated this list. And as far as other than a state license, I think that's about all they need, along with the bonding process, yes.
Do they self-regulate? In other words, if a new guy comes in, XYZ timber fallers out of Omaha, Nebraska, which there aren't any trees at all in Omaha, you kind of question that. But would the other say, hey, we've heard about this guy, and do they self-regulate in any way, rat on each other?
We do. I mean, our guys are out there.
Okay.
Yeah, there's you know, there's the bidding process, there's the award, and then there's a contract that keeps everybody in line. That's okay. It's kind of how we regulate the logging. We've got everything listed in a contract.
You should read one of our contracts if you haven't. They're really specific. Uphill side of the slope, no more than 9 inches or something like that for the top of the
stump height.
I mean, it is specific on everything that needs to be done. That's just one example.
And one thing that we're kind of emphasizing more than in the past is actually having a logging plan. When we do our pre-work meetings, the contractor comes to the meeting with some kind of a plan in hand on how he's going to log this thing, the order, if it's multiple units, what units he's going to do first. We do, you know, log scale agreements between mills. So if the guy's doesn't have ready cash, he sells his logs to the mill. The mill pays the county for their portion. So.
And then, okay. Split check.
Yep. Okay. Exactly.
Okay, I was wondering, because in the car culture, you go to the big auctions, you're pre-qualified, or you don't get a path.
Yeah.
Because it clogs up the water, muddies up the water.
We don't have a lot of experience of people who bid on stuff and don't perform.
Right.
The performance bond really is that that tool in the tool chest and the contract itself. I don't believe I've ever been part of pursuing somebody for not holding up on a contract. I think there's been points of clarification on those processes as they're going through the harvest, but I think they've all gone. We're pretty hands-on in that process of the pre-activity meeting that you guys have.
Yeah, pre-work meetings.
Pre-work meetings. So,
you know,
they spell it out pretty clear.
Right. So we've got a contract that, you know, they've got to follow. There's also the Oregon State Forest Practice Act that they have to follow. And, you know, with the two entities and the administrators on the ground, it usually, you know, works out pretty well. So.
Yeah, it's a good process. Having fewer sales to monitor, I think it's going to be easier so that you're not in multiple locations, maybe.
A lot more efficient.
Yeah, we're going to, it for us too, so not just for them.
What are we waiting on the other ones?
I believe we're just waiting on contract signing also. That's
okay, so they're with the other people, the bidders, not us.
Right.
Okay.
They've some of them, I believe, have signed and returned. Others have not. So we're still waiting on mainly the returns, so that you guys have a contract in front of you that's signed by the contractor already.
Yeah, we wait for
that's
that.
That's the first.
Well,
step.
We don't have to wait for them to be in batch. We are happy to take them. You know, if there's one or two as they trickle in, we're happy to do that. So this is great.
That's what this is, a trickler.
So this is one in a series, and so
There's four other sales after this. So.
Great. Mm-hmm. Well, we're happy to move this one forward. It's an administrative element, and I can speak to it if you're not available at one. I mean, we don't need to impose on you.
I probably won't be. I'll be looking at future sales.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you, Mr. Kearns. We'll get this moving forward.
All right, thank you.
Where's
Rick? Out of here. Can we read this item B for a moment?
Absolutely.
So my memory could be off in when these hearings happened and kind of the outcomes. But my memory was that we kind of broke them down into a less controversial and more controversial of sorts sections. And I thought we were going forward with the fencing, the lighting, the stuff that is in this section.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, I didn't realize that portion was waiting for the levy. Or the question. I thought the other portion was going to wait until we talked, got some results from that question. So I love that we will revisit, but my memory was that these are the ones that we had agreed upon even back then. And
I think that's a fair point, an accurate reflection of how things happen. So the other thing is that time management and trying to figure out, I think moving forward with the levy request, that dominated a lot of legal's time, and they're kind of a focal point of this kind of stuff. So it's really juggling different things. I wish things could all move together, but they didn't. I think we're going to, with that off the table, we can move forward on some of these things. So it's project management. It's what I've been told from that office.
And I bring it up also to highlight that there's still the elephant in the room portions are still unaddressed.
They are.
Yeah.
But I think, like
these are
said,
good moves.
The non-controversial, moving
yeah.
those forward, I totally agree about the fence. It seems kind of crazy.
Well, we're waiting on the fence issue that we were waiting for the state of Oregon, because somebody said the state of Oregon was just going to abolish the need for fences whatsoever.
That kind of hurt.
I'm trying not to interrupt. I'm waiting for you.
No, go ahead.
That's why these ones we said to move forward, because they weren't necessarily just related to marijuana.
Right.
It was about that if people are using, let's bring up Bed Spring Acres as an example that has been there up on Fur Canyon off of Cheney Creek for however many years, that they literally are using rusty bed springs as a fence.
Yard art.
And yard art, yes.
Used the word for certain.
So if you remember, this is some of the things that she was trying to take out were the things that are potentially hazardous, unsightly, some of those things that are not related necessarily just to marijuana grows, and that's why these ones were going forward, because it had nothing to do with marijuana regulations. For instance, having either sight-obscuring fence, remember the muted earth tones, and can be reviewed. We talked about colors. We talked about what it can be made of. She doesn't want it being root balls or hay bales or junk or inoperable vehicles. Some people are using vehicles to be their fence line, plastic sheeting or tarp. So those things were not related to marijuana industry in and of itself. These were regulations our community development director was asking us to put into place either way. And that's why we said back in February we were going to go forward with this stuff and not wait for the vote. The stuff that specifically just because of the marijuana industry is that stuff that we had said we would wait.
That's
and
good
have.
Point.
But it does apply to everybody just the same. So
yeah.
Yeah, we'll get it moving forward.
Okay.
I think those ones are going to be really good. So excellent points. I do want to probably go through each of these with the board before we move forward with first and second readings with Julie.
This is on B.
I'm not exactly sure why she isn't here. However, she is on vacation for the later part of May. Not available, we're not available next week, when she would be available before she leaves. So we're having a little bit of a who's when we all here, and that's going to be in the first part of June. So,
do you see any problem with moving to the first part of June?
No, not at all. I don't think we have a choice.
Okay.
But I did want maybe at a general discussion for us to go through and perhaps talk about those.
That's a good idea.
I'm not sure from a land use perspective how we're governed as far as whether or not we can have discussions on text amendments without convening in a hearing like we did. And I'll check into that, whether or not...
Well, and what my understanding...
You can't discuss a land use issue that's got a pending kind of a process, so that it needs to be... I want it done before we go to the first and second reading. Because you can make changes, but they cannot be substantial changes between your published first and second.
Yeah.
I mean, you can change a word here or there, but it can't change too much. So I don't want to get the cart started, because we publish those things for first and second reading and then have a change that we could have worked out in a quick general discussion.
And, I mean, I would counter that we've had just suggest that we have had a hearing on these already. Me reading through it is the wording that we had recommended in that hearing. And there's stuff not in here for, like, the Williams overlay's not in here. Some of the Merrill, you know. So this was the outcomes of those hearings. So, yeah, the first and second reading, let's make sure that the wording is what we had.
I don't feel comfortable having not reviewed it since that one that I was 100% behind all of the stuff that we had talked about and resolved. So that's what I think we need to do between now, and we'll schedule a general discussion with Julie when she gets back. And we're working. So moving on to Parks quarterly updates also. We'll move right on to finance report and business update. It feels like Sarah was just here for this, so maybe that's why, doesn't it?
Or maybe she gave us...
Was that just a specific topic?
Yeah, it could have been the White Horse.
White Horse? We looked at White Horse, we also...
No, I think... Wasn't it within a month? I feel like it was pretty recent.
I'm going to guess it's probably a month and a half, maybe 2 months ago. But,
was it?
But she also was here on the sewer field out there at Schroeder. So, I mean, she's pretty well...
Well, and we were just here because of... The one out in Selma too,
and the water treatment plant at the water
Whitehorse
system
at Indian Mary.
April 6th.
Well,
there's one other element that I can think of.
April 6th. Parks.
Okay, great.
So we've
had
this
not much more than a month ago.
Since Commissioner Morgan and I have come on board, we've heard from just about
you
every.
You sound
every
like you're up to date.
There
is one element that Arthur and I are working on a solution for. Is the And it was his idea. No. It was brilliant. I'm just kidding. How does she pay for the work crews that she's been getting for like a decade?
You mentioned that topic was going to come up.
We have a potential solution for this. However, it will not be implemented this year for a revenue stream, but it'll be a revenue stream in the future. And I'm looking at proposing a loan from the general fund to the Parks Department to satisfy this need for this year, that she'll be able to pay back. She could probably accomplish it in her budget, but I don't want it to say, well, you would have had this ending fund balance and a little bit of cushion, but now you don't at all because you're operating with this thing. Let us do a loan for
soften
you.
Soften
the ease into the deep end of the pool, and we have a solution to where you are going to be able to pay this back. And we know that revenue stream and blah, blah, blah. So we're working on that.
I heard somewhere in the Marble Halls that the work crew cost per work crew went up a lot.
Well, it certainly did for her because she was getting it for free. But I think that
hers was being paid out of Title II,
that's
Trial III money, and they stopped doing it. And Community Corrections
paid
for it this last
year.
Yeah.
So it's been 2 years.
The state paid for her to get her work done.
It's not.
I like it.
It's not her fault. I'm going to claim responsibility that I didn't solve this problem last year. I should have. The corrections gave us a year to do that. Really, it's Arthur's fault.
Yeah.
That's why I'm sitting here.
I should have had it done.
A lot of sore toes from kicking the can.
But I really feel like we've got a solution, and I just need a little bit of time. So,
okay.
That's what I'm looking for.
I think so.
We'll propose something formally, but I have told Sarah, she's freaking out. I mean, from a standpoint that I can't afford this, and I can't afford not to have these people who are coming out twice a week making our parks beautiful. So, and this is, you know, at the beginning of her season, getting everything ready. Yeah, she needs these. She's got it up through the end of June because of the fiscal year, but after that, you know, but we've got this temporary solution.
And I would suggest that Community Corrections, the cost of having a work crew out there versus being able to be competitive to get the bids is a balance that you're going to find that they're always trying to find. It probably costs us more to have the crews than we can get a bid approved for. However, we also manage our jail numbers by having work crew alternatives for people that don't need to be sitting in jail after their sentence. They can be serving that on work crew, or that's also an alternative for someone working off court fines that they can do through that program. So having that ability to have those crews, I think, is appropriate for our community as well.
It's a good symbiotic relationship.
It is. The cost is offset by state funds, so the amount that they're charging to parks or to other users is really the subsidized cost.
Mm-hmm.
So $400 a day is pretty cheap for 8-person crew.
And it costs you easily twice that.
Yes, yes.
Mr. O'Hare.
Couple items. So I want to remind the board on the budget process that once the budget committee approves the budget, then we have to publish the approved budget in the newspaper, give it the required amount of time.
How much is that? What's the required amount of time?
Minimum 5, maximum 30. So we have to provide. We cannot publish. We cannot have the public hearing less than 5 days after publication. So typically it's a week. Basically, we publish on a Tuesday, and then we have the public hearing a week later at the business session on Wednesday, something along those lines. But minimum 5, maximum 30.
And that's okay with Sandy? Those numbers be all right with Sandy?
So I just want to remind the board that once it's approved,
you know, his assistant director named Sandy, right?
Yeah.
Just saying,
yeah.
I'll let you off the hook.
that we need to allow enough time for the publication of the approved budget and for the public hearing, and then for the adoption of the budget. So although there's potential for changes, and the board certainly has the authority to make changes between the approved budget and the adopted budget, if there are no changes, I would recommend that we have the public hearing and the adoption of the budget on the same meeting.
If the board comes back, does it have to go back to the whole board if there's
the whole budget committee?
Yeah.
No. I suppose you could say it depends on how much. If you have an increase of more than 10%, then So I just want to remind the board that we're getting to the point end of May, beginning of June, where we really will need to make sure that we allow ourselves enough time. The board allows itself enough time to publish, have a public hearing, and adopt. So.
We want to make sure that we're all consistent, that we're still leaning into the state picking up the burden of paying for the DA. I don't think that's changed. The $1.3 million that we allocate, or thereabouts, in general fund would be a substantial improvement to our patrol program. That was not funded in the levy. Or detectives.
We're substantially lacking in not further in being able to investigate a lot of this stuff.
I think it's really important that we not exactly specify the things that are not going to be provided as a result. So having these levy funds for the jail and the juvenile detention facility is going to be a new dynamic of an infuse in revenues that is yet to be determined of how those monies that were appropriated to that program, those programs, how they're going to be reapportioned, and obviously to law enforcement. So to say specifics about things we will not be able to provide, really I want to, you know, refine that priority with the sheriff and say, you know, what is it can you do with this, and where's the best and highest place to use those funds?
Well, and I want us to be intentional on making sure that as we are addressing those issues and making changes and utilizing this process, that we're actually reporting that to the public as well, and being very intentional of that we are providing this information. All right, you gave us your trust. We're going to keep earning your trust. This is what we're doing as we're going.
Meet those promises. Yeah, meet those promises 100%. So along those lines, and I'll reiterate this at the budget committee meeting this afternoon, is that finance is working to put some context to this, numbers to this whole process, mainly along the lines with juvenile, with Jim, director Jim Goodwin, that back in the time when he did more budget cuts and more reductions, he reduced his support staff to half-time, and at that point in time, he asked finance if we could pick up the difference as far as helping him in developing his budget and doing the financial parts of his, because he reclassed and downgraded.
He didn't have the capacity within his department to do those
to do that anymore.
Plus the work
yeah, because he got rid of Kim Garten and that. So the point being that we are doing that right now. So we're working on putting together some budgetary numbers and trying to get things back to say what it might look like. As I said, I'll bring this to the budget committee this afternoon.
So one of the challenges that kind of Arthur's having to spear point had this effort up is that because the budget has already been proposed and released to the budget committee, we're not legally permitted to discuss elements of the budget here because right. We're not a full committee. We're only a portion of it.
Right.
And so it really is going to take that focal point of finance to be able to refine these two different, well, this could be three different programs. You know, the DA is certainly included in all of that mm-hmm. law enforcement element currently. And that's going to take a point person to kind of work through those different fashions. And so I don't necessarily want to insert myself in that position, but I think having some historic knowledge about where we've been, where we would like to go, and I think maybe as the budget committee chairperson, the chairman of this board, certainly it will not be the end point. It's just a starting point from a foundational element of where we want to be. A lot of moving parts and trying to figure out what are those things that we know we need to do that are spelled out in the levy, and then working back from what are those things we can do is really, I think, where I'd like to be a part of that.
And I can talk to
the room for us to say, well, yeah. I didn't want to do that, or what about did we address this over here? We'll answer those questions.
To dovetail on what Commissioner Morgan said, I think it's very important when we do something that we make reference back to, and this satisfies this part of the language in the levy.
Good point.
And refer back to that, because we heard it all the time on the trail. You're not going to do what you say you're going to do with the money. It won't go where you say it's going to go. And I think if we make that reference back to and just say that.
Well, as we're working through that, we've got the fact sheet sitting right there, too, of saying we need to this, right down to make sure that what we're putting together
satisfies
is meeting what we said we're going to do. Yeah, yeah.
We have a description of each of these programs in the beginning of the budget book, and I think that it would be really important in that portion to reference, in quotes, the elements of the levy that are referencing the juvenile detention facility and the jail. And so you've got that language, and I quote, right there is the guiding principle with how these budgets are developed. And I think that could be a really good point.
I think what we're going to find when we get done is that we are going to be able to provide more than what we promised on the levy language, because the levy language is very restrictive.
Well, it certainly won't be less, and I think our intent was to do more.
But even if it's just something a little bit, no matter how small the item is that wasn't named on the levy, just say we're going to give you more than what the levy said.
Well, it'll be a little bit, because the levy the levy was a step forward.
Absolutely.
but it did not cover.
It's amazing how fast it goes when you say we had a hole of 3.7. So 7 is what we're bringing, 3.7. You talk about starting up, you know, the juvenile detention facility, which is over $1 million, maybe 1.2. So then you're already at a 4.5. It's $5 million hole and a $7 million revenue. There's $2 million left over. I don't want to get too much into the numbers, but it's quick.
Let's fire another letter off to the state on that.
I don't think that it's a bad idea. I actually was going to recommend that we refresh them.
Yeah.
As far as
they'll
we
come
have.
Back and say what letter?
We've heard formal response.
I think the timing after the levy and that our levy may have triggered the concept, but now that the levy's been settled, we're still on the concept.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we still think you need to take that.
We have a $14 million hole. We put a mm-hmm. $7 million
plug in it.
Plug in
and
it.
We still leaking water, so we really do need to have.
And that plug is dedicated to two specific functions. It does not help the remaining programs.
Exactly. So I think it'd be really prudent on our end of it to fire off another one after the levy. They go, whoa, you got your levy. So guess what? Yeah, we're going to back off from this DA thing. Absolutely not. No, we're still in the hunt on that. We still want you to take that over.
Does that, you're the liaison to the DA? Does that sound consistent with the conversations that you've had at the state level with certain people who are like, okay, so we hear you on this. How should we craft it?
Where are they at the state level? Are they waiting for the levy to say?
Have you heard anything or?
I haven't heard anything back other than that financially is going to be an issue. Some of the feedback I received initially was, who gives you the right to even ask? There was an offense that we had asked. And when I came back and I said...
Who else would have the right to ask?
Well, it was kind of like it more as a county. Who do you think you are?
We have $1.3 million of right.
Yeah. So it's but that's just it. But when I come back and I say,
how much are you?
If I cannot provide for my basic core functions of a county, how can I put the state's services above that?
Yeah.
And they stop in their track and they say, oh, I hear what you're saying. We're still not providing our basic core functions, mm-hmm. and that is mm-hmm. a critical element that in every way this partnership that the county and the state took on in 1980 in the circuit court process was they would provide the personnel, we would provide the buildings. We're providing the building for our courts. You know, community corrections is paid for, public defenders is paid for, RDA is paid for. Why is his staff and support not paid for if you want him to be able to do his job?
Yeah.
And we just have to get back to it is a state-elected office. It is not county. They do not work
I
for
think
us.
You make a good point that if nothing has changed from that side of it, we're still not fully funding what we need to do on a local basis for our constituents.
Is that a letter you could spearhead, Commissioner Morgan?
Different than?
Reiterating the fact that we have not received a formal response from our petition to the governor.
I think it's good to touch base with them after the levy.
Just to clarify that the recent levy supported
didn't change our position a bit.
But it also does spell the desire in the community to fund law enforcement and say, we want adequate service levels here. Your state function is not going to be able to meet that need and under current appropriations. We don't have the capacity to fund it adequately to match what the citizens have said they're going to support from a jail perspective. We'll have capacity there. You don't have a DA with a capacity right now to match that local, you know, we ponied up. Meet us in the middle and provide something to that effect.
I guess if you ever ask, I think you should be prepared to let them know where, you know, so, well, if you're going to get $1 million and something back, what are you going to do with it? Our detective, you bring up a very good point. We don't have any detectives. That's another key element.
Let us help you.
You know, we have the benefit of some of our former detectives still work for us. Our undersheriff was one of our lead detectives. He has the skills. But
wearing how many hats?
Exactly. We don't have a detectives division. I want to bring up something just as critical. We do not have a records division. Our records divisions are responsible for making sure the reports are filed and where they need to go, that uniform crime reporting is done, which is responsible for, you know, when we see our crime rates in the FBI and all those Oregon crime reporting, that all usually comes out of records. We have two dispatchers or two to four dispatchers that are performing that function while dispatching and taking calls and doing everything else. If there's ever a citation entered, they're the ones responsible for translating that in the computer system. So there is a massive amount of burden of people that are doing, we're not providing enough services. And like you said, patrol is not going to be whole. There will, you know, over and over I heard from the community in Illinois Valley, will we get night patrols? We are attacked at night. We are under siege at night. Yeah. How do we get night patrols?
I think the sheriff's...
Well, I think those are all good points that you need to have in your war chest when you talk to people up north. They go, well, why, you know, you got your stuff. You need to show where we're still short of the game.
Yeah.
And those are all important.
Is this a short joke just because I'm 5'4"? I mean, because doctors said I'm 5'5 now, so... Okay, just sorry.
Doing hairdo.
This brings up a point about I think we need to have a general discussion about other topics other than law enforcement, or maybe tangential. We've talked about evidence as being one of those things we would like to see co-located at the jail. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of when you have to clean out your house and you have to move, you make those decisions. And it's an incentive to get cleaned up and all that. And I know they're working at that.
This is an opportunity for us to do a whole bunch of little bitty things that will look
and
pretty
refine our efficiency as far as like how we operate and going back and forth and chain of custody and I think it'll be a real positive thing.
I think so too.
But
I need that, and we need that endorsement from the board if I'm going to work with Ryan on saying, okay, so I need you to put a contractor together who can, you know, lay it out and say, work with what's her name over there and design it.
The other issue is, I spoke with the sheriff yesterday about kind of first things that he's wanting to do, and there's going to be a lot of conversation you need to have probably with him, especially with the building off side of things. Mm-hmm. You know, prior to the massive cuts, our sheriff's patrol occupied half of the justice building, and they had a patrol squad room where each deputy had, as they were, had open case files. They were working on stuff there. They'd have a place to do that. They had an evidence locker to do processing. They had admin and all this kind of stuff. They have now gone into, they have taken their training facility and turned it into a squad room. And if they are going to be increasing staffing, might not fit.
Let me throw a blanket on this right at this moment. We gave in the current budget, in the proposed budget that's being considered right now.
Should we be talking about it then?
Well, I'm not talking about allocating funds. I'm not talking about adding programs or dismissing programs. What I'm saying is that we provided a budget that had a 90-bed jail and zero patrol. That's the same budget they still have.
Right.
They took jail out of it, and now we're adding a brand new detention piece. But what's left is still that austerity budget mm-hmm. that was providing a 90-bed jail and a zero patrol. That's all he's got to work with still, plus the massive reduction in the DA's office. I mean, that's the austerity budget. So we don't really have a lot of excess available because we were cutting 3.1. We need 3.7 to stay whole. We are cutting 3.1 in absolute dollars, and all we've done is take away the jail piece of that. So we're still massively underfunded from what we use in the current.
Another thing is we got to run that department between July 1 and November when the money comes in. So
right.
How did that get funded?
We have a $2.7 million beginning fund balance.
That'll carry you through.
But even
that's
that,
why we don't use our reserves up entirely.
But even that,
to get us
even
to
that austerity budget, that's taken a 2.7 beginning fund balance and ending with a 1.4 ending fund balance. So we're using 1.2 million of fund balance just to maintain the austerity budget, zero patrol, 90 bed jail,
sounds
half
like
of the
a
DAs.
Great reason why we should have a general discussion on this specific topic and look into the future. I don't think the admin is the right place to do it because we don't have the players in the room who need to be part of that discussion. And so I'm really into efficient conversations that are not duplicated. And so when we have those people who can answer something about, well, what do you want to do? Because we could want a whole bunch of things. But the sheriff might want something different.
That's why we're putting numbers together now to try to provide, and that's what we'll be bringing to the budget committee. Not today, but whenever the next meeting is. Here's real numbers. Here's what we can look at and what we can use for
early part of June. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be perfect. I think that's something else we're proposing,
is that
we are not going to be able to refine all of the nuances. We're going to have broad strokes about what we want to try to achieve in this coming budget. We'll say this again tonight. So that's the intent, I think, of finance, working with those impacted departments.
Yes.
And it will be refined over time, but this is the broad scope of what they're going to try to achieve.
So I've reached out to HR, I've reached out to Ryan in building maintenance, I've reached out to John in IT to say, what does it mean to bring juvenile justice back online? What are we going to have to do to the building? What are we going to have to do to the computers and the wiring? What are, you know, light switches, painting, cleaning, hiring new people? Computers. So we're trying to work through some of those details. And
new pillows.
No, you can
new
actually
mattresses,
buy mats
maybe.
And have the pillows built into them, and it's a better efficient model.
Yeah, we'll probably have to get new mattresses and new pillows.
I shouldn't know that, but
the
I do.
The things you know, Ms. Morgan, Commissioner Morgan.
I learned that one from the Sobering Center Board.
So just a quick update. Hugo Hills, that's moving forward. The Oregon Housing is working with options right now to get the legal descriptions of Ramsey and to reassign the obligations of providing to Ramsey. And once that's done, which may be done within the next week or so, then the expectation will be the payoff of Hugo so that we can alleviate the elderly bond restrictions that are that were on Hugo.
Who's going to be the who's the person that wants Hugo Realty?
That's not this conversation.
That's not this conversation.
He's just talking about options moved out, and the financing of the building had a restriction on it that four of the rooms had to be used for low income housing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
We're getting that requirement switched to another location, that building will be freed up.
And part of that whole thing is that we're paying off the old bonds that were.
Yeah, I don't know the history of that building out there. Who was in it? What it was for?
Yeah, secured treatment. It was a secured treatment facility.
For mental health services.
Yeah, for mental health.
I'd like to suggest that each of us independently take some time and maybe go tour it. If you haven't toured 210 Tacoma as well, I think that's important.
I couldn't get past the gate.
You can go around.
So how do we gain access to that?
You just call Ryan. Ryan or
call
Mike
Ryan
Watson.
And he'll,
yep. Okay. So let's do that before we schedule an executive session, because this is a property issue, which we can discuss in executive session, the disposition of land. So we'll get that on the queue for after the beginning of June and try to figure out a way to move forward. What's the best for that property?
Okay. And two other things. Out of the equipment reserve, Public Works wants to purchase three pieces of equipment. The equipment reserve has the budget, the money, but these purchases were not specifically included in the budget that was approved for the 16-17 fiscal year. So when that happens, that's why I bring it forward to the board to let you know what they're planning to do. The one purchase of the concrete saw, $14,500, it's a pretty good saw, but he provides all the background here of the repair history and what's happening with the saw and why it needs to be replaced at this point in time. That's really within the purview of the department head and the liaison, you know, that purchase capacity within our contract policy.
We're not reviewing that one. That will be Commissioner DeYoung.
Correct, Commissioner DeYoung. I brought it forward just because they submitted all three pieces at the same time. The two pieces that really more or less bring it over the $50,000 mark is they wanted to buy two chippers that each one individually is below the $50,000 threshold, but combined exceed the $50,000 threshold. So it's basically from one vendor, two chippers. The total purchase price is $99,000 each chipper, and these are massive machines. They're huge. They're pretty much half the size of this room. They're huge machines. The current ones are running at about 70% capacity. The repair costs, which he outlines here, exceed really the value of what it would take to have the value.
Chippers are high maintenance anyway.
Yeah.
I don't care if you buy a brand new one. The maintenance on a chipper is not...
Is not cheap. And they've spent enough on it, and they're operating like he said, it was... they used to take 3-inch logs, and now they're down to 2-inch because it's just not able to handle the capacity that
we're not buying 3-inch capacity chippers at $50,000 a piece. So they're probably 12-inch capacity, and I question why are we chipping stuff of that size. What I would ideally like is a conversation with Commissioner DeYoung and the manager of that. I'm not 100% familiar with chippers, but I'm pretty familiar. And the other idea is that we get the review from our Public Works review and say, does it make sense for us to be doing roadside vegetation management in-house as opposed to outsourcing to Trees Inc. or another contractor? And doing that evaluation where somebody else is maintaining this equipment and we're paying for it as an as-needed basis. And so I need that question answered before we invest $100,000 in infrastructure to facilitate that program.
That's a very good, you bring up a very good point, because the chipper itself is the cheap part of it. It's the labor. Setting up the road crew and setting up the work head signs and the flagmen and flaggers and all that other stuff. If they're government employees, they got to be more expensive than Trees Inc. or Stumps Inc. or whoever, I don't know that.
I'll make arrangements.
The roadside vegetation or the power line vegetation management for Pacific Power in the area.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say they're cheap, but they may be cheaper than us, and it could free up. I mean, it's not going to be free, but...
No, you're still paying somebody.
You're still paying somebody, but I just don't
know. When you're done, you write a check for a project that's done.
It's their equipment. It's their maintenance. It's their liability.
I will talk with Director Brandis and set up a meeting with you.
I don't need to be in. Okay. You know my perspective.
Okay.
I'm a Yellow Book conservative. If there's somebody doing that in the Yellow Book. And they're, you know, it's really, being on a roadside is different than being out in the sticks somewhere who's doing fuel brush removal. That's not the same thing. So I understand that there's a difference, but is that what we need to be doing in-house in Public Works? Maybe calling Klamath or Jackson, and do they do that in-house? There might be some nuance to it that I don't know that makes sense, that why we do that because of blah, blah, blah. Okay. Then at least I've got that when somebody says, why are you buying $100,000 of infrastructure when I could do it with my little $12,000 chipper that only takes 6 inch, but I don't chip anything above 6 inches because that's firewood.
There is, yeah.
I leave
there
it on roadside and somebody comes by and they get that, whatever's left.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Okay. No, that's exactly why we bring these major purchases to the board, to give that perspective. So that's good information, and we'll move forward on that. And that's all I have.
While you're here, Commissioner Morgan was on a call this morning referencing that issue in airports as far as us paying on a project that has already been approved for grant funding.
This is a core grant issue.
It's really, I really want finance to be part of these appropriations because airports cannot afford to be doing these things, and I would rather see these projects held up because the backfill for this is general fund dollars.
Yeah.
And if he's appropriating money out of that and we're not watching it diligently, the project needs to come, you know, those are the ramifications. It needs to be stopped, not us keep paying on these things, because they can be, you know, started back up again when the contract is signed, if that's what the state is requiring. But continuing as business as normal, when we're shelling out 100, 150 of our money, when it's already been approved for grant, I know he wants to move things along, but we've got to have that discussion before we start spending.
The biggest fear he has is losing the larger FAA grants, if not meeting the timelines.
I feel like those go slow enough as it is. They're kind of like transportation projects, you know.
I'd be interested to find out what the, because we all say they're kind of go slow, like transportation project, but you don't know what's going on up here. They say, no, we're not going to leave that money laying around anymore. Transportation projects, to me, just they want that money to move. That's when the government says we're going to pump money into the infrastructure. It's to create jobs and get the job done, not 7 years with Allen Creek Road.
But they have held $950,000 for almost 5 years.
Yes.
And so I would like to push back a little bit before, I mean, I don't want to lose the money. You guys know my perspective on this. I don't want to be spending any more money from the county that was already approved from a grant.
And he doesn't have the money to
spend.
He doesn't have a 10% match on a $6 million grant.
He's using some other fund. It's a loan, and he's not going to have a capacity to pay that back. Yeah. And that's my concern. By default, he's spending money he doesn't have.
So. Yeah. But with a core grant paying most of that and us paying a 1% on $6 million, you know, $60,000, that's doable. Airports can swing that.
Sure.
So, yeah, the core grants are lifesavers, and without them, we just couldn't do these FAA projects.
And right now we're operating without them. So, in my opinion, the grant wouldn't have gone forward without that core element. So let's treat it like it is. And we'll get there, you know, it'll catch up.
He did just say no to one project that he realizes he can't borrow the money on. There was one other that he had to pay a contractor, but there's enough, you know, he has stopped a couple
things.
Well,
and I'd really like that conversation to be a board conversation. If you're talking about infrastructure that we deem, you know, absolutely vital to the success of the airport, and there is no core grant money available, then we need to have that I want to have that conversation about everything. I don't want us to be in the queue and the manager making a decision where we would say, we've got our economic development money not exactly earmarked. I'm not advocating that that's where it go. I'm just saying that could be an option. So we should do that cost-benefit analysis conversation before those things are just kind of decided on. That was the one thing I really wanted to bring to our attention, that anything we need to do, we signed a letter, right? You sent a letter, Lily, on that to everybody?
I have to, when I talked with him on this week, when I talked to him, it was Monday, they were supposed to email me the status of it, but I think he sent the email out because this morning I heard Representative Wilson said he got the letter already. So I didn't see the final project I was supposed to, but he went through legal with it.
Track that one and see how we're going on.
I'm also asking him to get on a schedule for a general discussion with the board regarding the core grant projects and the status. What it is, financial impact, and all that.
Yeah, I don't see any way around it. I've talked a little bit with Larry, and I don't see any way that we can make that happen internally without the core grant. So,
no, those projects are dead. Yeah. But I want to know who we need to lean on legislatively. If it's
right.
In Department of Transportation, it says it's in Department of Justice, the contracts. But it's really a policy decision, however long it stays in the Department of Justice, for the Department of Aviation to say, we understand that our delay, if the delay is on our side, we've approved these projects. You can continue, and we have your best interest, the project's best interest, and you can bill against it once the contract's for work incurred. That's the Connect Oregon connection. That's how that one works. That's how a lot of these work. Let's just get this policy consistent. That's the Department of Aviation. Who cares how long Department of, I mean, we do care. That's not the issue. We're not going to be able to control the Department of Justice, how slow or fast they work. So that's the way I understand it. I could be wrong, but.
So do we even have a letter of intent or anything of that sort, any kind of document?
I think they were approved in March, April.
Yeah.
It's a policy in their thing of saying, yeah, we've approved it. And you keep working and incurring costs, but we're not reimbursing you for those until you've got a contract signed for these projects. It's like, really? Come on. You've seen our application. We're 99% there. You want us to hold up on this stuff because you don't have everything?
No. They were approved as a work in progress. And it wasn't as if it's a surprise. The two grants that were submitted, five submitted, but the two that were specified as work in progress, so the ODA, the Department of Aviation, knows that that's
what's
happening.
You can, I don't know that I want to wait for if Larry's not available for a general discussion, you have a conversation with him, maybe come back to the board and say, okay, these are the three things I want the board to do.
Okay,
and we're with you. That's what I would
like.
Well,
I've sent him off the email as far as getting on a general discussion with us,
because if you and Larry need to go to Salem and talk to anybody, everybody, it's worth this.
Okay.
I'd endorse that 110%, that it's the number one priority for airports right now. And
all right.
Getting that core stuff freed up and that understanding with the Department of Aviation.
Especially with the deadline on other funding.
Yeah.
Well, inconsistent with the other other Connect Oregon grant
policies. Else?
That is all I had.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Board business. Oh, any other business that the board has? Board business. I don't know why we have other. Because there's... Maybe we should move under board business. I might look at that, because that's really where it should come. We already have matters from commissioners. So we're on number 5, Resolution 2017-027, in the matter of an appointment to the Local Alcohol and Drug Planning Committee. Commissioner Morgan.
Yeah, we have two openings for maybe even three right now. We had our clergy just step down.
Right.
But of the applicants, only one really was appropriate and available, and that's the recommendation, Giovanna Mariquin. I'm trying to go by memory. So she's
great.
A nurse and works with his folks in the emergency department, has a desire to learn more about how prevention and treatment has a play in what she sees coming to her business.
She had a really great
application letter.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she got the full support of LADPC recommendation to the board to approve her.
Great. Any objection to moving that forward to the consent calendar item?
Nope.
We have a weekly business session on Monday due to a lack of a quorum for the rest of the week. Our charter requires if there is a quorum of the board at any time within a week, we do need to have a weekly business session. So those are the rules. We are going to convene.
That Monday will just be a busy day.
Yep. So we've got a land use hearing in the morning. I've worked out with the staff that I'm going to review every land use hearing before it comes forward. Also, they were not aware that I need to be noticed for all rural land development committee meetings. I used to attend all those when I was the liaison. It helps refine the process so that the Rural Land Development Committee is doing what it needs to do in an appropriate way before it gets to us. We have a tighter package. They're going through their processes. They've just recently done some things that they didn't actually have the authority to do. Those are just within the authority of the board, and so that'll be moving forward for us in the future. But I'm going to start trying to get more aware of how that process is moving. They're going to have a lot to do with these things that we're moving forward. The code codification is a number one, another thing that I want to really make sure that we've done. I heard earlier from legal that was going to be a project we were going to be able to sunset and have done by the end of the fiscal year. That was the goal. It is not on, I believe, a trajectory to meet that deadline. So much like the property management and our sales, behind the scenes, this is what I have a tendency to kind of do, is put together the meetings, and you outline the strategy for accomplishing these things on a timely basis. If left up to their own devices, it can take years. So if with the board's permission, as liaison to legal, I'm going to start organizing those on a more regular, we've never done them before, but on a regular basis of the code codification. And there's a number of players. Julie Smeltzer's got a significant portion of that code, but there could be others. We'll just need to, I think that'll be a strategy that we'll implement that will get it done. I wanted it done 5 years ago, but...
I spoke with Councillor Hicks, and there was one question that their office was still questioning, is whether the charter should be listed in the code. I would counter that it should not. Our charter is already available online and readily available, and it is separate from...
And it's not subject for the board to change. The statutes that govern charter changes are really separate from the board. They should be guided by legal or citizen petition. So what I see the code doing is a codification of the things that we have the authority to either initiate to the voters or can do by ordinance ourselves. And anything other than that is really separate. So ORSs are not part of the state's constitution. I see our charter as our constitution locally, and they're separate bodies. So I agree with that, Commissioner. I'm sure that'll come up in our discussions.
So I just thought, since you'll be following up, I just wanted to reiterate that was my position on that I do not believe the charter should be a part of it.
Great.
It's already separately listed, separate process. So, okay.
I didn't mean to sidetrack, but if there is anything, Commissioner DeYoung?
I met with the fairgrounds at the fair board meeting the other day, had a lot of really good discussion, but one thing I brought up to them was their volunteer program, and they, you know, that I said, do you have anybody signing volunteer forms at all? And I went, well, yeah, we've got some, but they're an eight-page deal, and I think they were mentioned, one of the, I think Terry out there mentioned it, Parks has a one-page thing, very simple. Fill it out, sign it, and away you go.
That's probably the county's page, because our volunteer application form is about one page.
Well, this one here, the one the fair board has, is the fairgrounds has, is 8 pages long.
Why? The fair board is different than volunteers out there, because they're bonded. Theirs application might be longer, but volunteers at the fair should fill out the county volunteer form.
Well, I brought it to Wally.
Okay.
And to find out if we can simplify that, because right now there it is at such length that they're not using it.
Right.
And the key to it is that they use
make it.
So we have
easy.
Something on file.
Because they're volunteers.
Yeah, they're volunteers.
JD, do you mind coming up and talking about that? Because it's really facilitated through his office.
Right.
As a risk manager and such.
JJ's
personnel.
Name popped up a couple times because I figured it's going to end up in his lap anyway.
Yeah.
Probably got a file on it somewhere.
Yeah, so we have a couple different types of volunteer apps depending upon what they're doing. So Parks has people that show up and volunteer a single day in order to mitigate the cost of a Parks Pass. And it's a the totality of what they're doing is less than a normal volunteer. So they have a shorter version for just that. And then they have the full county volunteer app, which is longer, but it also it covers some of our liabilities because they have greater exposure. As it relates to the parks, I don't have any problem looking at it. And what are they doing?
I think the fair
ongoing
one is what's in question. I mean, Sarah probably got the parks one down between, you going to be here for 6 months and doing stuff, or are you just here for your 8 hour get your park?
Right, or a couple of days. And case in point is they've got a lot of volunteer help that wants to repaint the floor in the commercial building out there. And so they got some volunteers go, oh, yeah, I'm going to come and do this, I'm going to come and do that. Well, guess what? You know, I think somebody needs to be signing something in case somebody gets hurt on the job or whatever. And right now it's just, well, no, we just let them go. And that's not good for the county.
No.
So I just think there's got to be a happy medium between their eight-page deal and the GM going to go out and prune the rose bushes. But I just brought it to their attention that I think they need to sharpen that up a little bit.
Sure.
And then another one thing that they were bringing up is on the floor in the commercial building, they had a volunteer that said he didn't come in there and sandblast that. You know, sandblast the floor and they get it all ready to go. And I said, be careful doing that first. I want them to make sure you have the paint tested, because some of that paint's been out there since 1942.
Yeah, is it lead?
Does it have lead in it? Because if it does, and you sandblast it, now you've got to take the sand and the chips and everything over to dry creek. Mm-hmm. So do some testing on it up front before you get it.
You have to be certified in order to deal with lead.
Correct.
You can't just have anybody doing it.
But I need, I think they've got a painting contractor that's going to oversee the project.
Yeah.
But that's just one thing. I just didn't want them going out there and doing it, and somebody said, what do you do with all that paint? And you go, well, we blew it out the parking lot, or we took it over and spread it on the horse track. You what? Now you've got to go retrieve that. So I think there needs to be a little bit of, I left a message with Peggy about that.
I'm okay with those conversations happening directly with our risk manager, and they don't necessarily have to come before the full board.
I just wanted to, let
there's
them
know. I like being in
theoreticals.
Right.
Not so much tangible examples. But yeah, no, I think that's great.
I was concerned about that. And then I gave a couple ideas on that they had free ticket options.
That's another thing is Ryan's working on an email that I'm going to send out that says, so we've kind of been a little loose in how people have dealt with their properties because they think they're theirs. But they're really not. There isn't anything that they own. And I kind of iterated that at a manager's meeting I hosted the other day, is that you don't own anything. The sheriff does not own the jail. He's a curator, but the county's really, and we've invested all of these infrastructures to one person. That's Ryan Johnson.
Yeah.
Nobody else gets that.
I agree with that.
But I can tell you, I've gotten feedback from contractors working with that they will no longer work with the county if they continue to go through some of the issues that...
And I'm okay with that. I'm 100% okay, because if Ryan, dealing with him for the last 6 years, says that there's an issue, then there's an issue. And I stand behind his opinion on things 110%. So I know that may be bureaucratically cumbersome, but it is the challenge that we have at the county, and I don't want to deviate from that. It may be sometimes not so positive, but then there are other times where he has saved our bacon on things that is worth its weight because of decisions that he's made.
I think
he can work through stuff. That's the positive that I've heard.
I would say that there's some pretty big issues out there that
I have not heard
have been costly.
I have not heard those. What I've heard is costly decisions that are made because they didn't consult with him out front ahead of time.
Examples were he signed off on a work, engineering was paid for, permits were purchased, and then he changed his mind. And it caused it to go back to engineering, back to permitting, and he had signed off on it.
That's totally possible in some of our old infrastructure where
the
facade looks like that, and I'm looking at the commercial building. Sounds like a good idea, but you break through this wall or you discover something, and it's like, oh dear, this is not going to. And sometimes that's as a reflection of what I've heard. The city has asked for that kind of stuff, where initially, without getting into the details, it looked all fine. Yeah, this should go this way, but it didn't.
At the point that engineering is done and permits are issued, I mean, it's the plans approved, took and signed off by Baum to have it turn around and be changed to have to pay for engineering again and permits. Yep.
Yep. That's okay.
And
I feel like there's a lack of communication there and has been.
But if he's signed off on something, he's given his blessing. And to come back and change it, that's where I would have to counter. Don't sign off on something if you're going to come back and change it.
Well, then I would counter the fact that the board has routinely done amendments on contracts. That's a standard thing we do. And so I don't operate that way with any contract we do. Amendments are always open because you don't have perfect information. There are a few contracts where we don't do amendments. I bet we do one on this forestry one we're going to sign off on Monday, that it won't go exactly how we thought it was going to go with the stenting project. So I think that there's an element of communicating early, and that was not done on that project at the fairgrounds with Ryan. So it was kind of brought in halfway through the project.
Here we go with the communication portion of it.
Yep.
And I think that's we need to open those lines of communication
email.
Rather than saying, I'm my own little guy here, and no, I'm in charge of this, and I'm not talking to you, and I've got these people.
That's
I'm working a deal in the back room, and then I'm going to bring it to you. But it's somewhere along the line, somebody has to be responsible for the blessing.
That's what that email is going to say, is that
and
Ryan
that,
is
and I think that
is the
needs
person.
To go with Ryan.
For good or bad.
Yeah. But he needs to justify it. You know, for instance, if the fair can get, then the fair's great about this because they've got, I mean, you can't tell me Mary Groves isn't.
Mary Groves or the other one.
Mary, either one of them. Yeah. They have a unique ability to go get stuff done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's one of those deals where they just march ahead. I've known Mary Groves for 60 years.
Yeah.
She's not one that lets grass grow under her feet. She's very impatient.
Yeah.
She's not real good about, okay, I gotta follow this through, as government does. She just says, I'll have it done before you guys even start talking about it.
Yeah. I can say from a liability standpoint as risk manager, I think it's a great idea that she uses volunteers. It's good, cost effective.
Mm-hmm.
But the project, if it's dealing with infrastructure stuff, really needs to go through Ryan. And you know, should there be better communication? Absolutely, because there was a project that didn't go very smoothly. But, you know, like if they're going to be painting, great. Well, are they going to be up on scaffolding? Because maybe we don't want volunteers up on scaffolding.
But also contractors. It's not necessarily mm-hmm. volunteers doing painting jobs, you know. But there's also different buildings that fall under different purview. Who paid for that building? Who's responsible for that building?
It doesn't matter who pays for it.
Yeah.
It's the counties. That's what people don't understand.
All tenant improvement.
It doesn't matter if it's on county property. It is Ryan's responsibility to be part of that process. And we have kind of deviated from that in the last couple of years just to afford the opportunity for Mary Groves of the world to go and get stuff done. But we've gone to a point where it's too loose and people are not recognizing the underlying principle of it. It is not yours, it's the county's. And at the end of the day, Mary isn't sued if something goes wrong and scaffolding doesn't work out. And it isn't Peggy. It's us. And we're going to look to Ryan and Peggy and say, well, how did this happen? And Ryan's going to be like, I didn't know anything about it. It just kind of happened. And that's not a good place for Peggy to be. So that's what I told in that meeting. I said, the intent is great. I don't think there's malicious intent by any one of these issues that we were addressing over there. It's the fact that at the end of the day, if something goes wrong, it's Peggy that loses her job because she didn't ask somebody or say to the liaison, which is now DeYoung, out there, hey, this is what's going on, and is this okay by you, or should I do this a different way, Arthur, or anybody else? There's nobody standing behind you, then you're it, and you don't want to be it. You want somebody else standing with you to say, yeah, we worked on this together. Then it's fine. We'll defend it. We'll work through it. So always room for improvement, and I think communication, you hit the head, nail on the head, and that's really what Ryan is asking for in his emails. I don't want to micromanage your project, but I gotta know that it's going on because I'm in charge here, and how can I be if I'm not? So that's what we'll talk about.
Going back to the engineering thing that Commissioner Morgan, we've had experience in that over across the pond, and that was the first, engineering was the first audit we did. And I think it was justified.
This is not that. This was outside independent engineers contracted to do a job. They supplied it. The county signed off on it. It was submitted for permits and approved by the city. And then a change order was done. And it caused it to go back to engineering, go back into permitting, and then I don't want that product. Buy a new product. Money's been spent on product already that was already approved. So we're talking changes to the point of what could have covered three buildings didn't finish one building.
And I would actually really like to address this. So I think it has the potential to be talked about probably in executive session. And I feel like there's probably not a full story being presented, because I've heard my side of this. I've heard Ryan's side of the story.
Yeah.
And that's actually...
And I've heard the Fair Board managers and the contractor's side.
My consistency has been that Ryan's usually holds up. So the way I've seen things done at the fairgrounds for the last 6 years gives me a lot of evidence to say that that Ryan's has substantiated numerous times of, it's not how I would have done it, and this is what happened. And that's not the project that happened at the fairgrounds. That's not what I approved. The amount and what happened. So I encourage this conversation. I think we should, and use it as an example of how we can work better, because that's just one out of a dozen buildings that need attention out there. And how is it going to work the next time if we do something at the
other end of that very same building? Has got some real issues too. So
that would have been done if the financing
could have been
was
done
still there.
But going forward, is what we're asking is that Peggy says, come here, look at that. You see that, how that bulges out? I want that fixed. And then just give it to Ryan and just expect it to get done.
It depends.
However Ryan wants it.
If she's paying for that. Because there's a contract with the fairgrounds that they're paying $2,000 a month for Ryan services at 40 hours. Or there's a level of service. And Ryan's going to be like, your regular maintenance thing is eaten up. You're not paying for that. So that's going to come out of your budget. Do you have the money for that? Oh, no, they don't. So are they getting a loan? I mean, it's how. It's not whether or not. It's complicated because they're not part
but
of the
first
portfolio.
First step, should it be Peggy? First step should be Peggy telling Ryan, you see how that's bulging and eventually that's going to fall down? I want that fixed. Then Ryan goes and says, this is how we're going to fix it.
Yep.
And this is how much
there's
it's going
an
to
ongoing
cost.
Issue countywide from multiple departments that have said, our current process, and it would be appropriate for us to have a conversation with Ryan and the board at some point.
Yeah.
I do think that we need a better tracking system or a countywide tracking system. Right now, a department simply sends an email to building ops and says, this is my project I have, this is our maintenance need or our repair need or whatever it is.
It's a task request.
It's just an email that goes, this is what our issue is. They get an email back that says, a ticket's been entered. That department never hears back from BOM until all of a sudden somebody shows up to work on it. There's never a time frame explained. There's never a cost explained. There's never a process of updates. And yet BOM has that internally. They have a project tracking that they have internally, but they don't share that information with departments. And I've heard from numerous departments their frustration with communication with BOM. And I think it's an area we can improve upon and decrease frustration and show a prioritization. There's a reason for it. This came up. This happened. It's not necessarily that BOM's not doing it. It's that the departments aren't getting communication. And BOM's doing the right prioritizations, but the communication's not happening, so the frustrations are increased. Where if there was a way to say, this is how I put my ticket in, and I know that it's going to be at this point that something else happens. And because I can see where I am in the queue, I can see where I am in the process or what the delays are. And I think then people will ease some of that anxiety of when is that going to be fixed. Or that project of that landing outside of that one building in the arena where people go out. Okay, that's in there, but a note's in there that they have to wait for this weather. And then it'll be fixed or something like that. I think a lot of the frustrations would decrease if we had a way of people being able to
And also, if it goes through one
let's just have that conversation with Ryan.
Yeah.
This is another example. I want you guys to recognize when there's an issue and put the meeting together to talk about it.
Yeah.
I don't want to be critical, but I hear from time to time where we want to discuss something and then we discuss it. then we're going to discuss it again when we have Peggy and Ryan and Arthur and JJ or whoever needs to be in the room. That's what I want to look for.
But let's set that up.
That's what I'm talking about. So let's get that. We will definitely, because I think Ryan has also heard that frustration and really wants to do something about it positively.
I think at the end of the day, we all want to work together.
He does.
Let's just
recognize his
figure out a policy
staffing levels of whatever we're talking about.
Communication.
Perfect.
Do one of you have a meeting at 10:30 with the sheriff's office?
I do. I have it with Arthur.
Okay, because I just see our sheriff's office staff waiting, and I don't want to keep them waiting.
Well, we're almost done. Anything else?
No.
Okay.
Are we having a general discussion this afternoon?
I don't know that it's necessary.
I don't think it is. There's anything on there.
Okay. I should let you guys know that we have been, as part of Grants Pass, Grants Pass has been selected to be a Blue Zone project.
Mm-hmm. A what?
A Blue Zone project. I will forward some paperwork to you. It's already decided and been done. We're already there.
You're
going
to be sorry.
That's a Blue Zone project.
Can talk about it later. I just want you to be aware that it's already in the work in the community. The community applied and got approved, and they're paying for it. And
who's they?
Private industry, Asante, AllCare. Then I don't know who applied, but we got approved. We're there. So it is happening. The Dalles, Roseburg, and Grants Pass were chosen. Klamath is 2 years into their 3-year project. And
I think the liaison to the MPO who we were designated ought to be. I'm just kidding. Probably be.
Anyhow, I met with them on Tuesday, and I have some paperwork I will be passing along that I would like to get back after you're done.
Cool. Thank you. I think I'll see you guys this afternoon at 4 o'clock.
Awesome.
All righty.
Thank you.
Nothing else, we're adjourned at 10:42.